Hello and welcome to Hadfield Education's Good to Great webinar series, where I interview and speak with the head teachers and senior leaders within the UK education sector. Today, I'm joined by Mike King, who is the CEO and executive head of Releasing Potential and Releasing Potential Schools. Morning, Mike. How are you?
Morning. Good, thank you.
Excellent, Mike. Well, I always like to start off by finding out how you got into teaching. So where did you all begin?
So I left home at 16 and did the old youth training scheme, which is like an apprenticeship. And all the instructors there were teachers, and that started me on my journey. So if I was going to make it in the outdoors, I needed to become a teacher. And that was really influential for me.
Fantastic. And in terms of your study, what subject did you begin teaching?
So I studied PE and PSE, and those were my strengths. And so that's what I went with.
Okay. But you've moved into the SEN sector. How did that come about?
So all of my teaching practices were with special needs children. It was either inner city or independent special needs schools were my teaching practices. And it just happened to be what I was good at. My friends, they were more academically minded. They would be really good at the A level and stretching that intellect side, whereas I was much more influenced by how do we engage young people and how do we enable them to be part of the education setup.
And do you think that activities and sport play quite a large contribution in engagement with that?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of studies, isn't there, about how movement and activity can change someone's mental health and their self-awareness. And obviously, you know, we all had year eights on a Friday afternoon who don't want to be out on the wet football pitch during the activities. However, it did always give you a platform to talk about weight, diet, social care, as well as talk about, okay, how are studies going? So it gave you a platform to have conversations beyond the academic attainment.
Excellent. So which schools did you initially train within?
So I trained in a few schools around Swindon. So Heriot Parkway was one. And also I worked in Breedon Special School, which is over near Tewkesbury. I trained in Cheltenham. So that was the area that most of my teaching practices were in.
And within the special needs itself, is there a specific niche that you specialise with, or have you just worked across the board?
Over the years, I've worked right across the board. Every single special needs that you can imagine, I've worked with. But Releasing Potential is particularly about the child who is more social emotional or mental health or emotional behavioral or emotionally vulnerable. And obviously some of them are autistic spectrum, some of them will have other medical syndromes, but we don't focus on the physical.
Okay. And what led you to Releasing Potential? Was there like a light bulb moment or a specific time or decision?
Yeah, so I was teaching in Chichester College, which is down where I live, and I go to church, I have a faith with that. And actually in the culture that I was living in at the time with friends and family, there was a real sense of calling to have a social purpose, not just a career. And so in amongst that, there was the challenge of, well, okay, if I believe in something, but also have a passion about social justice, what am I going to do? So I distinctly remember we lived in Portsmouth at the time and talking to my wife thinking, right, we need to start a charity. We need to see how particularly outdoor education can be used to engage more young people than the few hundred that we were doing at the time.
Fantastic. That's one question that I often ask. Is teaching still a vocation or seen as a vocation? What do you think?
Well, that is really interesting. So one of my other roles, voluntary, is I'm the chair of the Institute for Outdoor Learning. And recently I was in Ireland at the European Outdoor Education Conference. And one of the things that academics there talked about quite a lot is how training now is very specific to creating technicians of education and not educators.
Yeah.
And I think that's not the individual's fault. I think that is probably the quickest and most expedient way to get someone from zero to hero in education terms. But I think we do lose out on putting people in the variety of teaching environments that enables them to become educators. So I did the old four-year BEd.
Yeah.
And that meant that I was in up to five different schools over a four-year period, as well as my holiday periods, spending time doing activities. So by the time I came out, I was an educationalist and a technician second.
What advice would you give to NQTs and student teachers then?
Well, so it'd be get yourself in as many different schools and settings as possible, whether that is you have to travel, whether you have to go to a primary school when you're actually secondary trained, whether you volunteer in a special school. When I set up Release Potential, I worked in secure units, children's homes, anywhere and everywhere where there were children who I could teach. And it was just to learn about what to teach. So teaching climbing in a secure unit is not going to be a lesson that works. However, I am going to be able to have to expand my teaching remit to get other things in. So it's exposing yourself to as many education opportunities as you can, particularly in those younger years. Yes, you have debt. Yes, you want to get in career. But when you become a head teacher or wherever your career takes you, you can draw upon all those experiences.
So when you initially decided to set up Releasing Potential, did you have senior leadership experience?
No, I was 26. I was a teacher in a special needs department in a college. I'd had leadership training through other choices, and yep. In the outdoors, you do a lot of outdoor qualifications. So I was a canoe coach by that time and sailing coach as well. So I had those types of experiences, but I hadn't had senior leadership experience in the education setting.
So talk me through your path then from the start of Releasing Potential through to then heading up and really developing the organisation.
Yeah, so Release Potential started 18 years ago in what became my daughter's bedroom. So we had a three-bedroomed house, and it was a tunnel-back terraced house in the middle of Portsmouth. And we turned one of those rooms into our office. And I said yes to everything. You know, so whether it was youth work in the evenings, whether it was pupil referral unit, groups going out, doing outdoor ed, whether it's special schools, and in the early years, supply, obviously. And we ended up building this reputation where we could go into pupil referral units and provide alternative provision.
Sure.
And that was great, and that worked. But what we found with the different head teachers and local authority changes, and this was in the early 2000s, so you had Labour in government, and you slowly came towards this different population growth and different financial circumstances, and head teachers would change their mind. And they would change their mind I don't blame them, they would change their mind, which meant that you were out, or for my staff delivering, you know, child A didn't turn up that day, so they filled the space with child B, which meant that you couldn't have any continuity in your teaching.
Sure.
So what that led to, as well as the government white paper saying every child needs to be registered under the Department for Education, is us creating a school. So we looked at that about 4 years ago, and we tried to mould something around the national curriculum, and it just didn't work. Our children are children who have failed within national curriculum settings. And, you know, they can barely get into the classroom, never mind go through the levels at which national curriculum is asking of them, of their age group. So we wrote a curriculum, and we've written it from scratch. It is based on other people's learning. It's not just ours. It is, you know, people would recognize parts of it. And we finally managed to register the school 2 years ago. And we then went through a full Ofsted just over a year and a half ago, and we got good throughout. And one of the recognitions was the curriculum and the fact that it was appropriate for our children. Fantastic. So the journey has been from doing a whole variety of educational provision to focusing on the school. And on the journey, we've got an outboard engine business, so students do work placements there. We have a rowing centre where the community have their rowing clubs, but we look after it with our students. We have an alpaca farm. Someone gave us some alpacas, so we obviously said yes. And our children are learning how to farm. And we have had said yes to some things like forest school, but decided actually, do you know what? We're a school. We're a special needs school, and that's what we're about. We're not about the whole population and meeting their needs. So we've actually closed that down and brought the forest school into our own curriculum and delivering within our own setting, because that's our reality, special needs and those children who don't fit into other settings.
Brilliant. It actually sounds like you cater for the actual individual, which is fantastic. In terms of the size of school, so how many children do you have enrolled now?
So we're registered for 50, and at the beginning of the year, we always come down. Our actual ideal number is 34, and we're at 24 now. And what will happen as the year goes on, and the reason why we're 34 is our ideal, is just purely the amount of space we have.
Yeah.
So we've never borrowed any money. Everything's come from scratch. And so we have two locations where we do our teaching. One is an old college building, and the other is two warehouses where we created 20-meter workshops with classrooms, and we have motorbikes and all sorts of things, and the learning takes place there. So our facilities really are ideal for 34 children on and off site. We are looking at then facilitating virtual education elsewhere.
Okay.
Bearing in mind, actually, that then supports children back into their own settings. Ideally, we will have no children at all, and they will go back into settings which are more socially acceptable, if you like.
Okay. And in terms of the current initiatives that you're working on at the moment, what are they?
So first thing is that we're bringing the school to the centre of the charity, making that at the heart of what we do. And the enterprise businesses are developing so that all of our children have a place to be in work and learn about work. As we know, special needs children don't all fit into the normal place of work, and we can, you know, so rather than have that difficulty, we've created those. And then we also have an academic institute. And the academic institute is teaching our staff, but also other people, around the management of challenging behaviour. And the programme that we use is for all of our staff. They do a level 3, like the MVQ level 3. And it's based on Glasser and choice theory, and it has a bit of NLP in it, and it has other teaching elements to it. And the idea being is that children are able to make a choice regardless. So this requires us to not do any restraint on our children, which might end up with a broken window or a broken door. But that's the risk we take. It's a massive risk, but we all have a common language by being trained in our management challenging behavior. So that's now developed from an online course at CPD, which British Cycling and the Institute for Outdoor Learning recognize.
Brilliant.
We also have a level 2 online, and then we have a level 3, a level 4, and a level 5. So we go up to degree level. And in our area here, actually this Friday, we will be teaching all of the primary schools in the locality on this methodology. and we're going to be taking them through a course. So that's, so we're basing our teaching on the management of change behaviour on our practical application. So we have three things that we want to focus on. We want to be able to provide quality alternative education. We want to resource other people providing alternative education. And we want to stand in the gap between the marginalised and society. So that could be as simple as our children are in an outboard engine business and they learn how to do customer service.
Yeah.
Could be as simple as that. Or we could be a voice in very difficult circumstances. So those are our three objectives.
Excellent. And what are the bigger term pictures? What are you looking to progress onto in the next sort of three, five years?
Yeah, okay. So we have a three-year plan at the moment. This year is about really cementing what we've established and developing it within our own restraints. Next year is our Ofsted year, which is always good fun, but you know, that does focus the mind, and so it's establishing everything around showing Ofsted just what we can achieve with these children. And then the year after, we are going to be looking at planting new schools, not miles away. They will be connected within 40 minutes of where we are now, so they can still visit the alpaca farm, they can still go to the rowing. So it's to do that, but then it's also to provide more resources in the challenging, in the management of challenging behaviour, so that people within their own settings can do things. So I'm not interested in having a worldwide web, as it were, of schools, but I am interested in resourcing people within the context of where they are and sharing what we've learnt, sharing the mistakes, sharing the triumphs, sharing the tears, you know, just being able to say, this is our reality and this is what we've learned, so that people can hopefully learn themselves what works and doesn't work within their context.
So what have been your biggest wins?
Becoming a school. That was a really triumphant moment. Obviously, we're quite a humble organisation, and so the idea of becoming executive heads and things like that, that's not our driving force, but to be able to have a place where our children can be in a recognised establishment, that was a really big win. I think having the confidence of local authorities in what we do, that is something else. You know, our reputation in Hampshire and West Sussex is high.
Brilliant.
And personally, probably outside of education, other than family and all of those wonderful things, is probably being the chair of the Institute for Outdoor Learning, and so having a national influence around things in the outdoors.
Fantastic. And what advice would you give to any, say, senior leader who is contemplating making the jump and setting up their own school like you've done?
Never burn your bridges. That is number one. You just, you know, you can't beat being nice. People will always come in and out of your life. You will always make mistakes. But never burn your bridges, because you just don't know when those relationships will come back into your sphere.
Sure.
And so I guess it's never burn your bridges. Apologize when you need to. Be humble, but also be determined. There's you can have a determination without being arrogant. And so I think having a humble determination around what you're about actually opens doors.
Absolutely. And in terms of now being a head within a school, what advice would you give to any sort of aspiring head teachers that are just going to follow, say, a normal path, if we call it that?
Yeah, I think...
because you've really learned the hard way, haven't you? You know, you really have learnt via sort of trial and error, and then going out and testing and probably failing an awful lot in comparison to what 90% of the people who watch this will be in, say, mainstream or an AP that is already established and already structured, and they will have a route and a path. Whereas your route's been completely unique. So you've got so much sort of information there, having to learn it yourself.
Yeah. So I think aspiring leaders need to listen to the people that are there, but set a vision for people to follow, be determined about that vision, but at the same time, to be able to bring people with you. You're not leading if no one's following.
Yeah.
So you've got to be able to lead people who want to follow your vision.
Great advice.
And I think that, you know, people have great memes about failure is only a point of learning. And I think that is true, but I would say put support structures in around yourself, whether that's you play a sport, you do an art hobby, that's going to sustain you through the difficult decision times, because you will have those difficult decision times and you will need to have something that sustains you, that is healthy for you. Sure. And that's always difficult.
Who's been your biggest influence within your teaching career?
Oh, man, I read this question earlier and I was thinking, oh, my life, who is it? I think in the early years, I was lucky on my youth training scheme. I was surrounded by brilliant teachers and they were really good and they were, okay, I need to become a teacher. My first boss at the college, she was formidable in her passion for children. And she understood how to run business of a college and to have a passion for children. So that was really influential. I think educationally, the people who astound me the most is in special needs, you get this thing. Okay. You get this thing where people like to compete about how bad their children are. And we call it the competition of the bad. And it's an awful, awful thing. So, because ultimately I could regale you all sorts of stories around the depths of which our children are involved with in society and those people around them. But it's the humble, it's the determined, it's the one, it's the teacher you come across who has such a fierce passion and yet humility about themselves, that they are confident in what they can deliver. It's the educationalist rather than the technician. It's the person who's able to light a room up, not because of their personality, but because of what they're able to deliver. And it's not about them as a person. It's about the children engaging with what they're putting in front of them.
Sure.
Yeah. Anyway.
And in terms of the next sort of steps for you, where do you see the school sort of branching out? You've obviously mentioned other locations. It sounds like you have got a really nice niche to develop and to progress.
Yeah, so I think one of the key things is we have focused on looking after the staff team and the family. And I'm sure there are some staff I've upset. I'm sure there are things that I've made wrong, but ultimately we're a family, we're a close knit. We have the privilege of doing debriefs every day. So we have that time together. And so one of the key things for us is not to overexpand, because otherwise we're going to lose the closeness which we require for our children to engage. So yes, we will expand in West Sussex and Hampshire. I think for us from there then is to develop our institute. So I have some academics who work for me, and to develop that institute in sharing what we've learned so that people can take that back to their own setting. They can be able to deliver what we deliver, but within their own context. We only, you know, along our coast, we have Chichester, Portsmouth, Southampton. They're all different culturally.
Yeah.
And so we don't want to expand into cultures we don't understand, but we do want to release and resource people who do understand those cultures. So our expansion, if you like, is around a minimal geographic area for the schools, and then to be able to influence and resource others in their own setting.
Because like you say, if you look further around the coast towards the Devon area, the actual culture around those parts is completely different from the Hampshires. So you are able to train and develop those teachers and get your message across and take them into those schools with their understanding of the culture. Sounds like a brilliant strategy.
Yeah, I mean, I've come from Devon, actually, interestingly, and I think you're right. It is so very different. The Southeast is so fast. And I understand there's the arrogance of the Southeast as well. So actually, we need to be humble in what we do, because just because you're in the Northeast doesn't mean that actually there aren't lessons to learn, etc.
Absolutely, absolutely. So in terms of your work, what's your favourite application within work? What do you use?
So my favourite app in work, I looked at this and I had to admit there are three. One is weather app.
Okay.
Two is tides. So we're quite tidal here. So it's looking at the tides if we're on the water in the summer. And then three is WhatsApp. So at 7:30, generally there is a WhatsApp message saying this staff member has got this. And so, it's WhatsApp, which is one of our key elements to what we use to communicate amongst the leadership team.
Excellent, excellent. And within your actual teaching, what book are you reading at the moment?
I've just finished just a run-of-the-mill detective. I'm actually just about to read a biography of a business person. So that's I'm really looking at, in professional terms, I'm really looking at what lessons I need to learn in the business world at the moment before we go on to this development of the business. So that's one of my focuses at the moment.
Okay. And where's your favourite holiday destination?
Well, depends if it's with or without children. So I had the privilege of being in Kenya again this year. So we climbed Mount Kenya. So that was good.
Fantastic.
I have to say, we've just visited Croatia. Amazing. Croatia, just people were friendly, sunny, and it was a good place for our children as well. So, yeah, it's really good.
Brilliant. And in terms of if people wanted to get in touch with you, talk in terms of the releasing potential training, what's the best way for them to get you?
So our website's www.releasingpotential.com.
Yep.
So that's all the information is up there and around there. You will find me on LinkedIn. So I will post that to you. But I am on LinkedIn. Those are probably my two major platforms.
Okay. Well, what I'll do as normal is I'll pop the links into the role below, and also they'll pop up here.
Right.
And then people can get in touch and speak if they need to. So, well, thank you ever so much for your time, Mike. I really appreciate your insight. It's been brilliantly unique and it's wonderful the work that you actually do. Good luck with the coming Ofsted.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to share. We're
no
always
problem.
Happy.
Brilliant.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.